I guess, White and Colfax and all the guys. And she was a very bright young lady and very outgoing. And my son was much more reserved and shy. He was 1 year behind her, and we worried a bit about him having to grow up in her footsteps and people saying, "Oh, are you Gail Zocher's brother?" So we ended up by sending him to Shadyside Academy, primarily because the classes were smaller by about half, and we felt that they would draw him out more, and also he could make his own record at Shadyside, bereft of anybody having come before whose footsteps he was following. So he went to Shadyside. So we decided that it would be better to have them do damage to two different school systems. So that's what we did. And but they both ended up at the same college. But we didn't worry too much about that.
Where was that?
Larger. Well, what I said to both of them was that we would be prepared to pay for their entrance at any college they could get into, as long as the college was not in Pittsburgh. If they went to a college in Pittsburgh, they would have to pay for it themselves. We wanted to break the umbilical cord. We wanted them to be on their own. And we did not give them the option, unless they wished to pay for it themselves, of going to a school where they could commute back and forth. And so they began the search process, and my daughter was the first one, and she went to a number of different schools, and she was accepted because of her record at many of the major schools she applied to. And the last I knew, she was going to accept, she told me she was going to accept Stanford, and she asked me which finally asked me, and I thwarted my opinions, knowing that anything I would say would have the opposite result. Thwarted my opinions until she asked me directly what I thought. She said she thought she was going to go to Stanford. And she asked me what I thought, and I said that of the choices that she had, that my recommendation, for a variety of reasons, was that she go to Harvard instead of Stanford, which she had also been accepted. She thanked me for my opinion and made no comment, and I went around telling people that my daughter had accepted Stanford. Several weeks later, I was passing by the living room where she was talking on the telephone, and I heard her say, "Yes, I decided to attend Harvard," and that's how I learned that she had gone to Harvard. Whether it had anything to do with what I said or not, I don't know. I've never asked. And and we had visited five or six different schools, and she had been admitted to most of them. So she attended Harvard. Then my son went through the same process, and he had many opportunities, and he didn't say a word to me about what his decision process was, nor did he ask me what my opinion was. He ended up at Harvard also. So I ended up having to make good on my promise that they could go anywhere they could get in, which then bankrupted the family for a number of years, since they chose about the most expensive university in the country. So I'm the proud possessor of a family that actually has 3 degrees from Harvard. After my son finished his undergraduate at Harvard, he decided to go to law school after tempting me several times with the possibility of his coming to business school. He last minute decided to go to law school, and he got admitted to some of the major schools in the country, Michigan, Penn, Stanford, and so on. I spent a good deal of time convincing him that it would be a good idea to have 2 major schools on his resume instead of one. In all of his infinite wisdom, he decided to go to Harvard Law School, and he subsequently graduated from Harvard. So I now have 3 Harvard degrees in family, of which I'm very proud, and I think that they've been exposed to some exceedingly able colleagues. Also, a very good education.
When did Bill graduate from law school?
Well, let's see. I'd have to figure that out. I think he graduated probably, I think he probably graduated, let's see, he would have been 18. '88, I think he graduated from law school. He took 5 years off going through undergraduate school because he took a year off in the middle, which terrified me at the time because it just wasn't done. During my generation, if somebody dropped out of school, the likelihood of their going back to school was almost nil. But in the current generation, it's more than likely that the students will drop out somewhere along the way and go back. And Bill did, and he spent about 4 months working for Congressman Stephen Solars of New York, which was an intriguing experience. He then spent 4 months working for an agency in Washington. Sister-in-law was associated with a community development agency, part of the government in Washington, and then he spent 4 months in a kibbutz in Israel in his intercession year, as he called it, and then he went back and finished his college work, he majored in social science, sort of. He majored in a had a major which was a combination of anthropology, economics, history, one other field that escapes me now. And my daughter majored in English history and literature, and she wrote an honors thesis on Rebecca West, the English writer. And they both were Phi Beta Kappa at Harvard. Very proud of that, and they did very well. So I'm very proud of the record that they've filed.
And where are they living now?
My daughter is living in Minneapolis. She subsequently went on to complete a graduate degree at the Humphrey Institute at the University of Minnesota last December, and she's currently working for a research firm called Search, the Search Institute in Minneapolis, which researches with government funds primarily problems associated with children and education, which is the field that she's most interested in policy. She just began that several months ago, and so they both now have graduate degrees and seem to be well credentialed, if nothing else. My son works for the Justice Department. He is a lawyer in the division that prosecutes white-collar criminals for violation of federal statutes. And his wife is also a lawyer, and she is a First Amendment lawyer. And she works for a law firm in Washington.
What is her name?
Her name is Karen Zimmerman Zoffer, C-A-R-Y-N Zimmerman Zoffer. I think she's given up on the Zimmerman's offer. It's sort of a long drink of water.
She's in disease.
She's in disease, that's right. She didn't have to change her initials or ours. Started out CZ and it ended up CZ. This is very unusual. And my grandson isn't working anywhere yet, but he's at 16 months. He's he's making nice sounds. And
what is his name?
His name is Joshua Phillip. In fact, we just came back this weekend and visited with them. Can't get him to say grandpa yet, but he is saying shoe and ball. And, my son has taught him, he has a little basketball game sort of for young infants, and my son has taught him how to put the ball through the hoop and to say at the same time, yes. So you'll go around the house and all of a sudden you'll hear the 16-month-old say, yes! And you know he got the ball into the hoop. So shoes, yes, daddy, and ball are about where we are at the moment.
Your daughter is not married yet?
My daughter's not married. I have to be careful about putting the yet on. These are very different days, and my daughter is not married. That's the factual statement. I'm being very sensitized to these matters.
Is it difficult? There was such a difference of the way you grew up and the way your children grew. Was there a lot of differences in permissiveness or understanding, or how have you dealt with all of that?
Well, I think there was a difference in a number of things. I consider myself to be conservative fiscally. My wife believes I'm cheap. But it's just how you look at those things. I told her when they grow up during the Depression, we are conservative this time. I don't think that my children and I have had any, or my wife, any sort of basic philosophical differences. The children, I think, grew up with, concern for other people to be a key issue in their development. Obviously, they grew up in an environment in which they were able to go to Harvard and essentially didn't have the economic deprivation or the fear that went with it. I think one of the worst things about those growing up in my generation was the fear of the impact of economic deprivation and the fear that you wouldn't be able to do something or wouldn't have the money somebody would, as they did with me, and I probably told you this in earlier tapings, asked me to leave the Hebrew school room because my father hadn't paid the bill. That was, I can't tell you how many years ago, and yet those kinds of things do have an impact on the psyche of a young child, which remains with them almost the rest of their life. My children did not have to deal with any of those things. They could go to summer camp, and that could, fortunately, I was able to provide for them. And so I think their view on such things is somewhat different. But I don't think there's been any kind of sort of major break between us in philosophy. We represent mixed family. I'm a registered Republican. My wife's a registered Democrat. So whoever calls on a political campaign, we tell them they have the wrong number. One of the most, I think, serious impacts, which I did not realize, is that by your actions and by your lifestyle, you imply certain things about behavior. I've often said to my children, I don't really care what your vocation is, whether you're a plumber or whether you become a professional, but do it well and do it with dignity and do it with skill. And I thought I was really doing the right thing to say that. But years later, my daughter said to me, and my son too, that everything that I did was antithetical to what I said. That essentially I encourage them to go to the best schools in the country. I encourage them to get graduate degrees. I myself was in a profession and had adopted a somewhat intellectual lifestyle, so that by example, my wife was a professional. She, her injury was a social worker, graduate degree in social work, orthopedic department, Children's Hospital. So we were a very professional family with professional values. And by our role example, we said to our children, don't be a plumber. Even though we said to them, be a plumber and be a good plumber, they believed that to be a statement of liberality more than a statement of fact or a statement of content. And so I think one finds that the subtle messages you give by what you do and what you say and who your friends are, and my son pointed out to me one time that if you look at our friends, that this one's a doctor and this one's a business executive, and said, you don't have any plumbers as friends. And that's true, because you tend to gravitate often to people who have similarities. But even the people I grew up with, my friends, they grew up the same way I did. So they tended to end up in the same kind of professions or marry people who were in those professions. And children, if nothing else, are sponges, and they just absorb what those messages are that are given very subtly by parents in ways the parents aren't even aware they're projecting.
Could you contrast Pittsburgh today with how you grew up, the changes that you've seen politically, economically, environmentally?
Well, certainly environmentally, I grew up at the time when you indeed could put on a white shirt in the morning if I knew the color was dark. That's often sort of indicated as an example of the old Pittsburgh, and to a certain extent, I guess it's true. I don't know if that's really the case, but clearly environmentally, with the loss of the steel mills, Pittsburgh has become a much more environmentally acceptable environment. I think it probably would have happened anyhow, even if you hadn't lost all the mills and plants and so on that were providing much of the pollution. And I think that the fact that economically they were not making it sort of added to the environmental purity. So Pittsburgh, I think, has taken a more dramatic move in environmentally, but many of the circumstances were not within their control. That is, it just happened naturally because the plants left. And I think I think Pittsburgh has become a much more bifurcated town than it was, and maybe town is the wrong word, but certainly as the population has been reduced, though I just read in this morning's paper that a study that one of the Pitt divisions did suggested it would start turning around, point will go up over the next period of years. But it was a shot in a beer town in the early years when I was growing up. And the highlight was to get on to the Oyster Bar or somewhere and have a shot in a beer and a fried fish sandwich. That was sort of the highlight. There were no sophisticated restaurants. You look around for a Thai restaurant or a Spanish restaurant or a German restaurant. And you wouldn't find it. You'd find ethnic foods. You'd find the Jewish delicatessens and a few kosher restaurants and so on, and you'd find some other things. But generally speaking, it was an unsophisticated town gastronomically, reflected, I think, in an unsophisticated town generally in other ways. But at the same time, there was the elite power structure here, major corporations headquartered here, that sort of, it's not really Pittsburgh, but they grew up here, the whole Mellon, Hines operations. They were major corporations having their headquarters here, often for reasons that were just historical more than anything else. But they fueled this town because of the huge amount of resources that they commanded. And I think that's less so now. It's a much more, the power structure in the corporate level is not nearly as strong as it once was. The sophistication of the population has increased substantially. There's not so much shot in beer. Many of the mill workers and so on have sort of gone by the way, and they're either unemployed or sitting in the Mount Valley for 10 years waiting for the mills to reopen, which aren't going to reopen. And in the meantime, what's come in has been entrepreneurial businesses, a certain amount of technologically sophisticated businesses. And so you have a small business nexus, financial services, to take the place of the sort of major corporate presence. Companies like Gulf have disappeared and moved Dowd and other companies have lost their financial clout. So I think it's a much more balanced city now. Good restaurants. I think a much more, a much less ethnic in one sense. That is, I think the ethnic enclaves, which were the heart of Pittsburgh, were much more enclaves than they are now. That is, South Side was South Side, and I don't remember going to South Side when I was younger. I stayed in East Liberty where I belonged, and actually I felt I needed a passport to get into Squirrel Hill. I think that's all stopped. We now go to the Strip, and we go to South Side, and we go all over, and so I think those, while the ethnic enclaves are still there, they've been invaded by Pittsburgh as a whole. And that was not so much the case before. Obviously, transportation is better and all that, but the whole mentality of Pittsburgh was enclavish, was to stay within your group. Wilkinsburg stayed in Wilkinsburg, and East Liberty stayed in East Liberty, as you say. Even the Jewish population in Squirrel Hill looked down upon the Jewish population in East End. And those of us in East End looked at the Squirrel Hill Jewish population as being sorority, fraternity-oriented, rich, and arrogant, and not very sensitive to the real values that, this, that the East End people managed to convey. I think all of that is all gone now. The breadth of city concerns is much greater, and Pittsburgh, I think, is a better city for it.
How do you view the Jewish community today in relation to the general community?
Well, I think it's more integrated into the general community. Squirrel Hill is no longer quite the Jewish enclave that it once was. I think there. The idea of non-Jewish people moving into Squirrel Hill at one time was sort of viewed askance. You know, well, you want to go up there with all those Jews for it. You're not Jewish. I don't think any of that is now vogue. I think that there was always strong Jewish presence, I think, at the universities and in some aspects, but not in the corporate world. Corporate world was completely devoid. Private clubs were, you know, very important in Pittsburgh. I think I told you the story of the University Club, but the University Club was no different than the others. The Duquesne Club was a long time before they took Jewish members. And so I think that the that doesn't mean that the desire to segregate yourself has disappeared. The Concordia Club still lives, and that's primarily a Jewish membership club. But I think there's less of that. My guess would be, in the long run, that you know, that club will perhaps not endure indefinitely, unless it decides to become a general membership club that encourages a lot of non-Jews to come in. So I think that we're a more sophisticated city, we're better endowed. It's a better place to live. Jewish community is more integrated into it in a variety of ways. I mean, it's much more, much easier to get into the corporate community if you're Jewish than it once was. And I think the it's a more egalitarian community. The differences between the top and the bottom are less pronounced than it once was. We were a bifurcated community before, but the polarities were wider. There was a sort of rich group up here and a sort of poor working slobs down here. I think there's a central tendency going on here. And
I always thought that that's why Pittsburgh was such a big sports town in the olden days.
Well, I think
because
it is.
That was the meeting ground of the higher echelons and the...
Well, I think it is, but also I think it's because of a large number of shot and beer people, which are often athletic people also at the same time. And I think that's one of the reasons it is a strong sports town. it has had that all along. That's one something that hasn't changed very much. Sports years, very high. And I think different things have happened. I've had the privilege of co-chairing the American Jewish Committee dinner this week, actually for last, at which Howard Baldwin, the president of Penguins, was honored. And it is, for the last 8 or 10 years, I guess, they've had that dinner, and they inevitably honor one of the non-Jewish major corporate leaders in the area, and bring out not only the American Jewish Committee people, but people from the corporations and the general business community who support that. And that's, I think, part of the integration effort.
Looking back over the years, how do you view your accomplishments?
Well, I think I've been very lucky, very fortunate. Some very key people have been helpful to me. The older you get, the more you realize that being in the right place at the right time, having the right people as mentors, and being able to take advantage of the opportunities is what is the difference between those who are able and not chosen and those who are hopefully able and chosen. So I just find the fact that I came up in the way of growth and development that I did and ended up where I did is absolutely unbelievable from the point of view of being able to predict it. I don't think I or anyone else could have predicted that, you know, this guy who probably, if nothing else had happened, would have been an accountant today. That was sort of the mentality that I had and was moving toward, actually. I would have probably ended up being an accountant for some firm. But events began to display themselves, which sort of moved me in different directions. And I guess I was opportunistic enough to pick up enough good batons and fortunate enough to have people with confidence in me, because I certainly didn't have connections, I'll tell you that. I was among the most unconnected people you can imagine in my development days. And my friends and I laugh. I call most of the business executives running the major corporations by first name and in the town. And it's almost hysterical to think that this little Jewish boy from East End, who hardly could find Murray Avenue if his life depended on it, can call up the chairman of Heinz or Westinghouse or U.S. Steel or whoever, call them by first name, and talk to them, and so on. And I consider myself very fortunate, not because it makes any difference to be able to say you know those people, that's inconsequential. But what it does mean is that you feel a part of the community. That's the important thing. Not that I could call up the president of U.S. Steel and say, Tom, this is Jerry. That's ridiculous. It doesn't make any difference. But the point is, I don't feel discriminated against. I don't feel that, and if you ask me the question, which I really didn't answer, did I face discrimination? I think in subtle ways, yes. I've already told you the story of the highly unlikely assessment of my ever being dean of a business school here that was rendered by one of the vice chancellors of the university here. So I have faced prejudice, which is more descriptive prejudice than anything else. That is, I didn't. There is nothing that I wanted to do or get that I haven't been able to because I was Jewish. It may have been harder. I certainly couldn't get into the university club when I wanted to get into the university club, but I did eventually. There isn't any club now that if I wanted to get into it and I were otherwise acceptable, then I couldn't get into. Now, I don't know if that means there are good Jews and bad Jews, and good Jews can get in here and there, and the stereotypes can't. I don't know. But from my point of view, it's always been there. And every once in a while, I wonder if that outcome had anything to do with my being Jewish. But as the years go on, I say that to myself less and less. generally I say to myself, don't look for excuses. You filed that situation up on your own. And if, even if you were Catholic, you still filed it up the same way. I am very fortunate in thinking that that while it swirled around me, I was in a protective cocoon, as I mentioned to you in earlier tapes. I generally ran with a Jewish crowd in a Jewish neighborhood, and so I was protected. And it was many years before I came out from under that cocoon. And then I was fortunate enough that the position I was in gave me some credibility with it.